You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN. This is Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Yes, friends, it is just that. I've got a problem with the Yankees and Gary Sanchez. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. On Twitter, it is at Chris Carlin. Instagram, of course, over on TikTok, it's that guy Carlin. And I would urge you to join us there. We're going to get to plenty of the Jets, don't worry. But after this afternoon, we need to start here with Gary Sanchez. As this season winds down, and the Yankees have seemingly gone in the tank in the month of September, winning just three games and losing nine, and really falling apart from being fully in command of the number one spot in the American League wild card to now two games back of the wild card in the loss column of the Blue Jays. And yes, some games left with the Blue Jays. You could always do something there. I heard something today that Brian Munguia forwarded to me. And it just ticked me off to no end. To no end. And it's pretty simple. And I'm going to play it for you. And I'm going to need your immediate guttural reaction at 800-919-3776. But I can tell you mine was not good. It was not good at all. And the question that was posed to Aaron Boone this afternoon was, do you worry about Gary Sanchez's confidence behind the plate?
Yeah. I mean, we're constantly addressing things. You know, Gary does a good job of not letting all the noise creep in, I feel like, and he does move on within a game, within a day-to-day very well. So I don't worry about that too much. I get frustrated a little bit even for him, you know, that he has a couple plays that I think you and probably most everyone that's covered us on a daily basis have seen a guy that's caught really well for us this year and that has made really important and I think substantial defensive strides. And sometimes, because Gary is the lightning rod that he seems to be, sometimes a play or two really torpedoes some of that or changes that narrative. And that's not necessarily fair. I think it's important to acknowledge the strides that he has made in every facet on the defensive side, while also acknowledging, you know, a couple of big mistakes this week, you know, without question. But I do feel like he has the maturity and the makeup to be able to handle it and move on from it.
He has the maturity and the makeup to be able to handle it and then move on from it. Then why did you just spend a minute on the situation instead of just saying, no, I don't worry about it, he's fine? I'll tell you why. Because he doesn't have the maturity and the makeup to move on from it. Because he's 28 years old. Because acknowledging the very minuscule improvements that he has made defensively is not important to acknowledge. This is not someone that just got to the big leagues. He has been in the major leagues since 2016. And he has regressed. He is not the offensive player that he was early in his career. Is he better than he was at the beginning of this season? Sure. You know what he was at the beginning of this season? On the verge of getting designated for assignment. That's how bad he was. But you know why he wasn't? Because the Yankees will never acknowledge a mistake this big. Gary Sanchez has been in this organization since 2009. At 16 years old, they gave him $3 million. He has been a phenom at points in his career. Somebody that looked like they were going to be the next great catcher in the game. Somebody that was putting up numbers for his position that were staggering. That ended. That's over. He has somehow salvaged, and I'm using that word incredibly loosely, what was a season that had the potential to be absolutely abominable. But he hasn't salvaged it to the point where it's actually a good season, where it's actually a season that you would look at and say, yep, I can live with that. Especially when you are a bad defensive catcher. Bad. Look at what he has been in three of the last four seasons. Stop worrying about looking stupid and being wrong and seeing him go somewhere else to flourish. He is 28. He is not 21. This is not a kid whose confidence that you should have to worry about ruining. This is somebody that's been around for 5.5 years. And all the Yankees continue to do is baby him. Grow up. Be a man. Get after it. And either be the player that you're supposed to be or don't. It's sickening to watch this. Sickening to watch this. Because over the last 2 months, he's been terrible again. Again, his OPS is under 700. Can we just acknowledge this is not a good offensive player anymore? It's not. It's a bad offensive player, and it's a bad defensive player, and it's time to move on because players like this suck the life out of your team. Suck the life out of your team. But God forbid Brian Cashman admit that he's wrong about somebody. We're going to give everyone every chance in the world to get back to what they are. And that's why the Yankees are where they are. Not because of just Gary Sanchez, but because they have constructed a team that is nowhere near consistent. I just ask you this one question. How would it go if you took a player like Gary Sanchez and put him on the Yankees teams from 96 through 2002? How would that go? Let me answer it for you. Not well. He couldn't be who he is. He wouldn't get babied. They wouldn't still be worried about hurting his feelings at 28 years old. And that's the thing. Boone actually did the right thing last week when he came out and said, yeah, he's got to make that play. Of course, there's the acknowledgement of the weather conditions that night. But on that wild pitch, yeah, he's got to catch that ball. And yet somehow, the excuses continue to flow. And it becomes more and more about acknowledging the very subtle improvements and some narrative that the Yankees have created about how much better he's gotten. And then one or two bad plays just ruins all of it. No, no, no. The one or two bad plays, they absolutely drive home the point that he is a bad defensive catcher. And as I'm saying this, he just had one go right between the wickets. Right off his knee. It didn't even hit the ground. And it went back and gave up another base in the first freaking inning. But I'm supposed to be excited or hopeful or acknowledging of what is a minimal, at best, improvement in what has been a nightmare of the last 4 years with one nice year in between, in which he barely played over 100 games. Dear God. What has this come to? His OPS is 743. That does not overcome the butcher that he is behind the plate. Suck it up and move on already. Because when you have situations like this, it just continues to slowly kill you. We're going to get into plenty on the Jets in a bit. And on the Gerrit Cole booing yesterday. There was a lot more to it than Gerrit Cole. Let's leave it at that. But that's coming up in just a bit. 800-919-3776. Danny's in Massapequa. He's next on 98.7 ESPN. Danny, what's going on?
Hey, Carlin. Love the show.
What's up, brother?
I just want to start by saying I'm a longtime Yankee fan. I'm in my late 40s, seen some bad teams. I'm not one of these millennial kids that used to seeing the Yankees playing, you know, being in first place all their lives. But I'm sick and tired of Gary Sanchez, you know, and I hate the fact that we lost a manager like George Girardi because that bum needed to be coddled and handheld, and he had to worry about his feelings when Girardi was trying to help him make a better catcher. Like, I'm just so sick of it. I'm so sick of him. You know, it's a shame, and it's a shame that I was having more fun with this team when they were playing the young kids during that winning streak rather than having these overpaid bums on the field right now. It's sickening.
Look, it's not even necessarily about overpaid bums and all that, okay, because some of these guys have actually been getting it done. I mean, Aaron Judge has been getting it done. Stanton, we have to admit, has been pretty good. You know, there's no getting around that.
Guys. I'll give you those two guys.
And I'll look, give you those two. You want to get on Cole for yesterday? I understand it, but Cole was right there in the discussion for the Cy Young as he should have been leading into that yesterday.
Yeah,
but look, I get the frustration. I get where the frustration is.
I'm talking about those guys.
Yeah. I get where the frustration is. I appreciate the call. The two guys in particular that are just not bringing any great energy to this team and are really more of energy vampires are Sanchez and Torres. If you constantly have to baby them and you can't ever criticize them and they can't seem to get out of their own way, at what point do you cut bait? I mean, I'm even willing to wait it out a little bit on Torres, but if the right situation pops up this off season, then yeah, you go ahead and trade him. And I still think teams would trade for him considering that he is still a very young, talented guy. You know, Sanchez is 28 years old. I mean, let's be clear about that. It is not a spring chicken. He's not, he should be in what is right in the prime of his career. I mean, Torres is still what, 24? Gleyber Torres is 24 years old. Mike in Middletown is next, 98.7 ESPN. Mike, what's going on?
Chris, what's up, my man? How are you, my man? How are you all as well?
What's going on? Everything's great, Mike. What do you got?
You touched on great points, man. You stole my thunder a few times. I mean, that's what you do. You know, but Gary Sanchez, it's just getting old. That ship has sailed, Chris. I loved him. The guy was a real deal. But that ship has sailed. You're 28 years old. Come on, we're done with him. And as far as Gleyber's concerned, I mean, the guy doesn't have the killer instinct to be in New York. Like, he doesn't even have the moxie of Javi Baez. I can't coddle these guys anymore, Chris. I don't get it. You nailed it. You crush it every single time about them. And the truth of the matter is, we need to move on. Again, no one wanted me to want Correa. Fine. Get me Trevor Story. Bring in Javi Baez. But we have to move on. That's the bottom line. I appreciate you calling. 100%, you're the real deal. And thank you very much.
Thanks, brother. You know, look, the move that would have been there to make, in theory, would have been trading away Torres to get Trevor Story this year. And I asked the question, would things have been different? Have you seen what Trevor Story's done the last 2 months? Now, granted, it would be a completely different situation. And he was having a bad year. And he's a free agent at the end of the year. And you might say, why would I give away Gleyber Torres for Trevor Story? To win. How about that? Just to win. Does that seem like a good enough reason? I think it probably does. Just maybe. Maybe it does. 800-919-3776. How much different would this have been with Trevor Story than with Gleyber Torres? That's a fair question. I'm interested in your answer. Let's get to that, shall we? Next.
It's Carlin.
He's a big dumb animal, isn't he, folks?
On 98.7 ESPN.
Of course. All that and Sanchez hits a home run. Woo! We did it! All is well. Let's give him a 3-year extension. Let's go nuts right now. Wild pitch in the first inning that was his fault. And then a home run that barely clears the fence and left. Yep. That's about right. Changes nothing. Changes nothing. I am sick and tired of the babying of this player. Sick and tired. Spike in St. Pete is up next. Spike, what's going on, dude? How are you?
I'm really good. I'm enjoying this. And one hand to God, I said, no way he ain't parking one on that 3-1 pitch just for calling. But I'm sick and tired of him, too. So let me catch up. So, you know, I watch sports, I call the station, and I really love listening to you do a Rutgers game. So I'm planning my weekend, I'm kind of incapacitated, and I go, let's see, I got the Yankees, and now Cole's pitching Sunday, so just win one, maybe take three, and yeah, the Mets, you know, they're done. So Friday night, and then I catch the Rutgers game. My kids went to Delaware at Blue Hens, so, you know, it's got some there, but the Rutgers were really good. You're cool. You're great. Because I love it. And in Michigan, I don't know when you're leaving, but maybe Thursday, and we'll see.
Go on Friday.
Great. Okay, great year so far. Great. Every day. I love the coach. You must love it, too. So good stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah.
And 22 runs later, I'm bitching him on. What the? You know, it's so weird. I got to tell you, I'm fine now. Life throws you a lot of curveballs. You know, pineapple pizza and extra meatball. So whatever, you pick the right one behind door number two. You know, we've all played the sick day at school. So I see it. I go, you know what? They got whacked on Saturday. Cole's pitching. And I had a friend, real quick, and thanks for the time. Great to hear you. Good luck on the Rutgers game. I had a friend when Nolan Ryan was pitching. I believe he pitched 22 years. I could be off. And he saw him when he was in the Mets and did that relief bit. I'm almost done. And this guy was a math guy, statistician. He says, I will bet against this guy every start he makes in his career. He may throw five no hitters. You think he threw seven or eight?
Seven.
This guy made. He played. He was a statistician, so he knew he was favored. And one hit to God. You know this, Chris. At times when Ryan was in his prime, you had to give a run or two. Am I right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that was. I mean, there were times he was unhittable, and there were times where he would walk the ballpark.
But without looking, I can guarantee you could double-check me all you want. Was he a 522 pitcher? That's about it. And you were laying, you were always getting prices. So what I'm trying to say is these, even DeGrom, and DeGrom's a better example, and DeGrom's a better pitcher than anyone I've ever seen except Koufax. You made a fortune betting against DeGrom. So some things are meant to be, like Sanchez hitting a home run in 3-1. You knew it was coming, man. You knew it. So it went 320 feet. Look, Sanchez in his career, if you keep playing him like Michael says, with the at-bats, he will run into a bad pitch 25 times a year if he gets enough at-bats. I'm sure you agree with me.
That's what we just saw here a few minutes ago. Thanks for the call, Spike. I mean, that's exactly what we just saw here a few minutes ago. Yeah, I mean, Nolan went 324 and 292. You know, he had double-digit losses virtually every season. He was also winning between, 16 and 23 games. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. Hi, Richard in Manhattan. Hi.
Hi, Chris. Chris, is it Boone's fault or is it Sanchez's fault? The other night, I hear Michael Kay say, "Well, you can't take Sanchez out of the game and bring Higashioma. You don't have a backup catcher if Higashioma gets hurt." But let's examine that. You're telling me in the 19th inning of a game, you don't take out Sanchez because you're more worried that Higashioma can get hurt in the 9th inning, or maybe the 10th if we go extra innings. You think there's more of that of a chance, or do you think that Sanchez blowing the game on a stupid play is more likely?
Well, I think now, and thanks for the call, Richard, it is, considering you have a runner on second base, I would not want to mess around with Sanchez in the game. I'd be more likely to do that and take him out of the game. The argument there is simply this. If Higashioka gets hurt, not Higashioma. If Higashioka gets hurt, then you don't have a catcher, and Rougned Odor is your emergency catcher. Okay, but I think it's more worth the risk of putting your much better defensive catcher in the game in the 10th inning when you automatically have a runner on second base. That's me. That's what I would do. That kind of thing, traditional baseball mentality, I understand, it just has to change a little bit now. If I had one catcher that was far superior, especially in blocking balls, to another, then there's no question I would make that change. None. None whatsoever. Let's hit Lenny out on Long Island. He's been patient. Lenny, what's going on, bud? How are you?
Hey, how you doing, Chris?
Good. How are you?
First of all, I'm good. Let me just tell you something. You are by far, I think my favorite are you and Rothenberg, but you are immensely talented, and I'm happy that you are with ESPN. And obviously, I've enjoyed you with Rutgers for many years.
I appreciate that, and I'm much better than Dave.
Yeah, no, listen, I agree.
I'm kidding.
Stay a second.
I'm kidding.
I just wanted to talk to you. Rutgers football, team's looking good, 3-0. We're beating the games we have to win. Going into Michigan, what are your thoughts? I hear that we're 18.5-point underdogs. Last year we took them to a double overtime. Want to hear your thoughts about so far what we've done, your thoughts on Michigan, and the season going forward. Thank you.
No problem. Lenny, here's a few things. Number one, I think they've done a terrific job so far in the turnover department. They haven't turned it over once, and they have forced 8. They didn't get any the other day. Number two, I think they're pretty good defensively. I think they need to tighten it up against the run, and especially this week, because Michigan can really run the football. Blake Corum is their primary running back, and he has put up 407 yards in three games. Now, they played Western Michigan, Washington, and Northern Illinois. And so you get Washington at home, you know, 31-10. That's a pretty impressive win. They have run the football exceptionally well. I think they rushed for 388 the other day. So, look, they're going to have their hands full. And even Coach Yano today called it, to a degree, a measuring stick game to see where they are here. And talked about the fact that, yes, last year went to double overtime, but in a lot of ways feels like last year wasn't real because of everything that you dealt with when it came to COVID and when you were going to have certain players and when you weren't. So, you know, look, take it for what it's worth. I think they've got a good chance this weekend, and we'll see what happens. I think you're really seeing a lot of the positive developments here that you needed to see. You are seeing a culture is a word that gets thrown around a lot. You're just seeing a team that you get the most out of. And I think that's all you can ask for from good coaches. He's got a really good staff, and he's really good. And he understands what it takes to get it done here. And New Jersey does not make it easy, boy. This is not like going to somewhere in the South where it's just whatever you need to get done, here's the money. It's not like that here. Matt in Jersey is next, 98.7 ESPN. Matt, what's going on?
Hey, Chris, how's it going? Real quick, just want to chime in on Rutgers football. This kid, Manungai, looks like he's going to be the real deal.
He does look good. Kyle Manungai is one of their running backs. He's backing up Isaiah Pacheco. And the thing about him is he kind of looks like a bowling ball. He's got good speed, but he can absolutely just pummel somebody and truck them on the way there.
He reminds, and I was on campus when he was there, he reminds me of a freshman Ray Rice. It's really what he looks like. It just brings back a lot of memories watching him.
I think we're jumping the gun on that one, but okay.
Well, I'm just talking when he was a freshman, that's all. He's got all the tools to get there, but he's got to get there. Real quick on the Yankees, and this is what really bothers me about what they did last offseason, and I understand the money was an issue. You could have had Realmuto for nothing, and instead you gambled on Sanchez, and you hoped if he became like a 30-35 home run guy, you'd live with the errors. But if that was the case, you were going to end up having to pay him. And now here you are, and you're not going to want to pay him. And if you look at who's going to be available, you're not going to bring Chirinos back. Your best options are Buster Posey, who's coming off contract, who's 34, another 4-year-old guy in Yan Gomes. The catchers just aren't there this year. So there's not a doubt in my mind that Sanchez is going to be back getting paid like $10, $12 million because there's really just no one else out there that they're going to want to bring in and have start the bulk of the games next year.
You know, I'm not against, Matt, and thanks for the call, having two really good defensive catchers split the job. And I can get my offense somewhere else if I have to. Because it's more important that my pitching staff has two guys that they can all feel very comfortable with. My bad
habits lead to you're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Wasn't pretty, but you couldn't have expected it to be. 98.7 ESPN. Carlin, you, Rich Cimini. Rich, of course, of ESPNNewYork.com, covering the Jets and the Flight Deck podcast. If you haven't checked it out, Rich does a tremendous job each and every week covering the Jets and getting you all the information that you need to get ready for the Jets and their next matchup. Rich, it's Chris. How are you, brother?
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me. Kind of a grim situation yesterday, huh?
And you know what, Rich? I mean, to me, not surprising. It's one of those games that a rookie quarterback against Bill Belichick, he's going to be guessing it a lot of different times. He's going to be trying to make plays down the field. It really was not all that surprising to see that happen. When you saw it unfold the way that you did, what were your thoughts?
Well, I was a little surprised, to be honest. I mean, four interceptions is a lot. I don't expect any quarterback to do that when they go into a game. You know, you knew there would be struggles in this game. Patriots, I mean, this is not a vintage Patriots defense, but it's still pretty good. And you knew Belichick designs different things. Although, if you look back at the four interceptions, there was nothing tricky or you know, clever or, you know, disguised coverages that fooled Zach. I think it was just bad throws and bad decisions. I think the Patriots played a pretty, you know, they played mostly man coverage, and they were just better in those matchups than the Jets were. And when you have a quarterback who's throwing the ball to the other team at that rate, it's pretty damn near impossible to win a football game.
You know, when we saw it, it looked like at times, Rich, he just was, after the first couple, just kind of desperate to make some sort of a play and didn't even look really great in terms of his mechanics and fundamentals. Looked like he threw off his back foot a lot. Was that part of the equation, or did I just kind of invent that in my mind?
No, I know you do invent some things in your mind, but that is not one of them. I agree with you on that. Because, you know what, I think, hey, look, it's the home opener at 70,000. They saved him for last in the introductions. He comes out, you know, the place was rocking. He fed off that. You could just see from his body language that he was fired up. He was really amped up. And I'm sure that young player, it probably got the best of him. He wanted to do something special, you know, to get things rolling. Last week was probably in his mind. They got off to such a bad start. He wanted to do something early in the game to keep the crowd into it. And you just can't think that way when you're the quarterback. And he forced things. And like Robert Saleh said afterwards, I thought he phrased it very well. You know, it's okay to be boring sometimes. You know, take the check down, go for the safer throw. That's what Mac Jones did all day.
I was about to say, Mac was very comfortable being boring.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're boring and they win. And so that you're going to see that all year from Mac Jones because, you know, he's got better players around him than Wilson does right now. But I think, you know, they have to drill it home to Wilson that's the way he's got to play football.
Rich Shemini, ESPN New York, with us, the Jets, the Flight Deck podcast as well. Okay, so you were there. I mean, we hear the comments. We read the comments. How did he handle himself postgame?
Yeah, I thought it was fine. I mean, it was, you know, he kind of brushed it off pretty quickly. It didn't seem like he was demoralized in any sense. It's really how he responds to this that, you know, kind of makes or breaks players. You know, you see guys go through adversity. Sam Darnold had the ghost game, you know, in 2019, and I thought he really let that affect him in the ensuing weeks. He went out the following week and had another bad one against Jacksonville. And so that, you know, basically he has to flush it from his system. Not easy to do. You know, he's going to be under the microscope all week. If I were him, don't dare turn on the radio. Don't pay attention to social media and just go back and forth to work, watch film and try to live in your own little world because this is going to be a rough week for him. It's his first taste of NFL adversity.
Rich, when you have the offensive line that they do, and even without Mekhi Becton, I think one thing that we would have expected, if they were going to struggle in pass protection, that's one thing. But I think we also would expect them to run the football much better. And I think we saw that yesterday. Has it not been, I don't know, I don't want to say not as much of a focus because we're only in week two, but, you know, it felt like that by the time they really got that kind of rolling a little bit, the horse was out of the barn by that point.
Yeah, I mean, game situations dictated they had to change their play calling, but they did run the ball well. You know, I thought, you know, they changed up their scheme this week. I think probably all fans noticed that. In the first week in Carolina, they were using a lot of two-back stuff with Trayvon Wesco as their fullback. This week, Wesco only played two snaps on offense, and you saw more of a traditional two-tight-end set. They were running out of that a lot. They had a lot of success, I think 152 yards, if I'm not mistaken. You saw Michael Carter, some stuff that he can do. He was, to quote Robert Saleh today, electric in the game. So I think they found something there. You know, you got to stay with it. You got to be balanced. And, you know, the game got out of hand and they had to abandon the running game. But I think it's something to build on. Certainly the offensive line played much, much better than they did in week one.
Let's talk about the line as a whole, Rich. With the pass protection aspect of it, it's not like he was running for his life at all like he was in week one. And what's a little odd, he seemed to play better without Mekhi Becton. I don't know if that's unfair to say. It probably is, considering he got hurt in the first half last week. But that kind of bears watching a little bit here, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, it definitely bears watching. I think right now it's more happenstance than anything. I mean, NFL is all about matchups. And so, you know, this week, you know, maybe the matchup, you know, they had George Fant at left tackle this week. You know, I think they gave him credit, the ESPN stats people. I think he gave up one sack. They had Morgan Moses giving up two sacks. But I watched those plays again. A lot of the pressure came late in the game when the Jets were basically in desperation mode. They gave up a couple of sacks toward the end of the game. I thought the pass protection was pretty solid throughout the game. And, yeah, but the Becton thing certainly bears watching. George Fant is not as talented as Mekhi Becton, but he's more experienced. And I think he's probably a better scheme fit than Becton. So it's something to watch going forward. Certainly they're going to, both tackles will be under a lot of pressure this week in Denver. I mean, first of all, you got the crowd noise factor. And then, oh, by the way, you got Von Miller and Bradley Chubb, two really good edge rushers.
Rich, we're at a strange situation here with Denzel Mims. And I think we can both agree there is one universal truth when it comes to head coaches. They are going to play the players that give them the best chance to win. Why do you feel that the Jets right now feel that Denzel Mims does not give them a better chance to win than some of the other receivers like Jeff Smith that they're playing?
Yeah, great point. You know, Bill Parcells told me many, many years ago, head coaches are selfish. You know, they play the guys, like you said, who give them the best chance to win. And in this case, they obviously don't think he's one of the best four receivers. The fifth guy, as Robert Saleh was explaining in today's media session, the fifth guy is basically your special teams receiver. And I understand that. You know, your fifth receiver's got to be able to play teams. You know, Jeff Smith does that. He's their gunner. It's the fourth receiver where Mims should be playing, because that is largely a, you know, you're playing on offense in that position. You have to be ready to jump in if one of the first three guys needs a blow. And they quite obviously, without saying it, but it's pretty obvious, they don't think Mims is as good as Keelan Cole. And so I think there's probably a significant gap in the eyes of the coaches. I think they probably have issues with his route running. I know they got on him in training camp. He had a couple of days where he, you know, probably a few days, a few instances where he ran the wrong route. And the coaches got on him a little bit about that. And so I think, you know, coaches get favorites. And I don't want to say he's in the doghouse, although he probably feels like he's in the doghouse. I know he's frustrated by this. He's not happy at all to be a healthy scratch. But it is perplexing. Look, the guy's 6'3". He runs a 4.3. There should be a way to find a way to get that guy on the field. I mean, it's not like we're talking about a high-powered offense where there's, you know, they're scoring, you know, 28, 35 points a week. You know, they need a guy who can spark the offense, who can stretch the field. I think Mims is the guy. They feel differently.
Yeah, it's just bizarre to consider all of that information. And, all right, maybe it's he's not a great scheme fit, and the fact that he came from Baylor – where it was very limited in terms of the routes they ran. He's just not good at picking it up. But, man, it's hard to imagine the impact that he had in the second half of last year and him not being able to find a way to make that translate into a new system.
Yeah. I mean, and it's not like, I mean, they keep on bringing up that, you know, he missed OTAs, he had food poisoning, he lost 15 pounds. Yeah, I get it. Okay, he had a miserable spring. I can't even imagine going through something like that for a couple of weeks. But he was back for training camp, and, you know, he had all the reps in training camp. Not starter reps, backup reps, mind you, but still getting reps. So, you know, some of it's on him, too. I mean, he's got to hone his craft and become better at route running. Now, I even heard he was spending extra time after practice last week, working with Zach, you know, throwing on the side, you know, trying to get extra work in. Still not good enough to be playing. It's a healthy scratch. And I don't see a way that changes because, you know, Crowder is coming back soon. I mean, he's right on the verge of being able to play coming off that groin injury. And so that's another wide receiver situation. What are they going to do at that slot with, you know, Berrios has played well. He's got 12 catches in two games. You're going to take that guy and just stick him on the bench and go back to Crowder? I think we're going to have an issue at slot receiver as well.
Rich Shamini, ESPN New York, the Flight Deck podcast as well. One thing that we haven't touched on, and it's my fault, and it should have been brought up before now. Rich, I thought the defense played really well. I honestly feel like they did a very, very nice job yesterday, and it is a rookie quarterback, but nonetheless, they did. That game had the possibility of being a 40-6 type game.
Well, they were playing on short fields for much of the day, so that's the impressive part about the defense. I thought the front four did really well early in the game. You saw JFM, you saw Rankins get his first sack in there. You know, you saw Lawson get a couple of pressures, also got a roughing penalty, but, you know, they did get some pressure on him. So that was impressive. And I think these young corners have held up better than certainly I expected. You know, when you take a bunch of late round draft picks and stick them in there, you're not expecting instant success, but they have played well. And so I give them credit. It's Brandon Echols. There's something there. I mean, obviously they saw something because they cut Bless Austin. You know, they thought this guy could come in. I think he's got some dynamic skill set. You know, he's fast and he's got some good hands. And so he's a guy to watch. Now, the one caveat is they have not faced what I would call an upper echelon quarterback. I mean, play Sam Darnold and Mac Jones. And this week they have Teddy Bridgewater. I still wouldn't put, he's playing really well so far, but I wouldn't put him in the high powered category. It'll be, we'll know more about these corners in week four. They play Tennessee. You know, you got, Tannehill is really catching fire now. He's building some of the chemistry with those receivers. They got very good receivers, obviously, there with Julio in the mix. So I think we'll learn a lot about those guys in week four.
Okay, last one, Rich. Is it after week three, or is there a little bit later of an over-under where if Wilson has a bad game and Sam has another good game, we get the they should have stuck with Sam talk?
Yeah, you know,
I'm thinking week four. I want to give it another week.
I was thinking of that. I'm like, do I want to jump into this now? Yeah. And it's like, you know, because, you know, look, Sam's playing well. You know this. We've talked about this. I was saying before the draft, I would have kept Sam and I would have traded that pick. I'm not gonna second guess myself. That was my feeling at the time. I'll stay with it. But I just feel it's too early to go down that road. I know some people in the media already are. I'm not gonna go there yet. Let's see things play out. Of course, Darnold's gonna be better than Wilson right now. Number one, he's in his fourth year. Secondly, he's on a better team. So you can't, it's not an apples to apples situation right now in grading them. Now, if we're sitting here, Chris, in early November and Zach Wilson's had a few of these clunker type games and Sam is cruising along, then I think it's fair to examine that decision. But even for me, who's like a muckraking old tabloid writer, I think it's even a little, it's a little soon for that right now.
Wow. Wow. At least you admit it.
a little jest there, but I'm just looking at it objectively.
I mean, no, I agree. I'm just more.
Have you been talking about that?
No, I have not been talking about that. And I think that, you know, we're way too early to be doing it, but I just know it's coming. I was kind of more setting the over under on when the talk would really start to intensify. And I have to believe they're going to give it at least 3 weeks. I would say week four.
Yeah, one more. If they play poorly in Denver and Sam has another good game, then it'll probably open the floodgates. But I'm just saying that from my perspective, I'm going to hold off on that a little bit. But it's certainly a question that has to be examined a little later in the year because, hey, I mean, that was a major, major franchise decision that's going to shape the franchise for many, many years to come. And my feeling, you know, I just thought Sam had some talent, and with a coaching staff change and better players around him, I thought there was some potential there. The Jets went in another direction. They get the benefit of the rookie contract, which will have, you know, widespread implications on roster building, which will help the Jets. So it's a question we're really going to be debating for years, quite honestly.
Rich, when does the Flight Deck podcast drop this week? Which days?
It actually already did. Thank you for asking, Chris.
Yes.
You know, we have a really in-depth review of the Wilson game from yesterday. And Leje Douzable, the former Jet defensive lineman, now working for SNY and some ESPN.
And he's excellent, by the way. He's very good.
Yeah, he's really, really good. I love his insights. Leje has really found a niche, and he really, you know, doesn't pull any punches. He would really break down the Wilson performance from yesterday.
Excellent stuff. Appreciate it, Rich. Thanks very much.
You bet, Chris. Have a good one.
Rich Cimini of ESPN New York and the Flight Deck podcast. Check it out wherever you get your podcasts. It's really good stuff. And like I said, Leje Douzable is really excellent. If you've seen him on Post Game Now with Bart over on SNY, does a tremendous job. Wasn't all that surprised with what transpired yesterday. And no, Bill Belichick didn't do anything absolutely crazy that would throw off a rookie quarterback in any other way. It was simply trying to make things happen where they weren't there and forcing the issue. And that's not something that Zach Wilson can do and grow from. Look, we all understand when we hear him compared to Aaron Rodgers as somebody that can make plays on the run, that he can't walk in the door and be Aaron Rodgers. But I think in a lot of ways, that's what he tried to do yesterday. It's a hyped up moment. It is your first professional start at home in front of 70,000, and you're going against the New England Patriots and the greatest coach that ever lived. And that is, and they save you for last to get introduced. So you know you're getting all pumped up with that. So he comes out, he tries to make things happen, and it gets absolutely ugly. Okay, it's a game that you don't want to see, don't want to go through. Four interceptions is an awful, awful afternoon. He's going to go through it. Is he going to go through multiple of those kinds of games this year? You hope not. You hope that this was a major learning experience from him. I'm not worried in the least about having a game like this. I'm really not. Now, truth be told, I was with Rich. I felt like the Jets should have kept Darnold and traded away the pick and really load up on more talent at other positions, because you could find out if Sam was the guy this year if you gave him better weapons to work with and better protection. The offensive line was better yesterday. I think the defense was pretty good, to tell you the truth. Granted, that's not a game-breaking offense, but other than, you know, missing seven tackles on one play with Damian Harris, I didn't think the defense was bad at all. They gave you a chance to win the game if you had an offense that was even remotely representative at the time. What he went through is the kind of rookie quarterback game that you used to see back in the day. That Peyton Manning had a couple of those kind of games. All the real good ones had a couple of real clunkers. And that was a real clunker. It's just all about the response now. It's all about the coming weeks. What happens this week in Denver when you've got the altitude? Now, granted, I believe Provo's got some altitude as well, so you might be used to playing in that before, but you've got Von Miller and you've got Bradley Chubb chasing you down, and you've got a pretty good defense on the other side and an incredibly loud place to play. What's that all going to be like for him? I'm sure it's going to be, again, a hyped up moment on the road trying to shut up an opponent's fans. I, for me, am not remotely concerned about Zach Wilson. I would need to get to the second half of the year to truly be concerned, unless every week is like this, which I don't believe it will be. I would have to get to the second half of the year before that was the case. I think the only thing that really bothered me yesterday was that if I can tell your mechanics are off when you're throwing off your back foot and stuff like that, just trying to make things happen with your arm, you're not Patrick Mahomes. You're not. So, you know, he can do that at this juncture in his career. And even he, when he forces some plays, we saw last night, makes a dumb play and gets intercepted. It happens to everybody. What you can't do is throw it into an area where there are two receivers and four defenders, which is what he did on the McCourty interception. Didn't get some help from Corey Davis. The ball was a little bit high, but Corey Davis says, I should have caught it. But he could have gone check down right there. There are things he will learn. I'm not going to worry about this at all. Not in the least. I fully believe in the plan and everything that is going on. And I think you do need to be on board with that.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Carlin, 800-919-3776. You know, it was one of those days that there weren't numbers that really jumped off the page, but Michael Carter, for the first time, gave you a little glimpse into what he may be able to do. Now, the Jets ran for 150 yards in the game, and that was incredibly encouraging. I don't think a lot of it meant a whole lot. They're going to have to do it more effectively earlier in the game so that it does take some of the pressure off of Wilson, to be sure. But Michael Carter went 11 carries for 59 yards. And I liked what I saw. I really did. I think he's got a chance to be decent. Now, you'll remember that the other guy that was in the North Carolina backfield was Javonte Williams, who was drafted by the Denver Broncos, who they'll see this week. Williams was the guy who was more of the starter, but Carter was the guy thought to be more explosive. You watch here. I think with a performance like yesterday, even as Ty Johnson ran it well and Coleman ran it well, I'm not going to be surprised if Carter starts to emerge as getting maybe a few more of the carries than the other two. The breakup yesterday was 12 for Johnson, 11 for Carter, 5 for Tevin Coleman. I think that number is going to start to favor Carter slightly more and more each week. 800-919-3776. That was extremely encouraging to me. Buddha in the Bronx is next on 98.7 ESPN. Buddha, what's going on, baby?
Cat Daddy, what's going on, Cat Daddy?
How are you, kid?
I'm good. You're right about the kid Carter. I mean, hopefully, I was hoping by the end of the season, like you said, he becomes the lead dog because he is the most talented of those backs. Listen, I'm just listening to the interview you have with Rich, and I'll say this much. For me, this season, and if nothing's changed, not since that game, Coach Caesar Sala, Wilson, and then LaFleur, to maybe a little bit of lesser extent, they're getting a pass from me for this year because all of them are brand new in their positions. The only thing I'll say with LaFleur is you got to be able to identify when you got to stop the bleeding. When he threw that second interception, they needed to shorten those routes, you know, get him on some waggles, get him on some boots, give him half the field to look at, you know? I felt, you know, like they let him try to play his way out of that, and I don't know if he's ready for that yet. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, completely.
Yeah. So, you know, that's the only thing I would say with that. Now, what disappointed me when I heard you, when you were talking with Rich, I mean, I've heard Alan say this recently. I've been speaking about this for a minute. You know, when we discussed how Becton might be more talented than Fant, but Fant is a better scheme fit, and then how Mims is not a good scheme fit. You know, these are the things that concern me because, you know, I keep hearing about how this player is not okay or this player is not living up to what he needs to be. I mean, where's Ashton Davis? Jabari Zuniga. There's an issue there. And there's a person who needs to be better at their job. And you know who I'm talking about.
Joe, you're talking about Joe.
Joe Douglas.
Yeah.
It's Joe Douglas. And I mean, you got, but like you had an interview, and I'm not going to blame you. You don't have to bring it up. But I mean, Rich, could you say something about that? I mean, like, come on. But like, it is blatantly obvious. When you look at Becton, the only one of the offensive linemen that he was better than in that draft in that first round is the kid from the Giants, and he stinks. The kid Willis is better than him. The kid Wirfs is better than both of them.
Well, Wirfs, you know, and Wills are better than the two of them so far. Here's what I'll say about Becton. Yeah. On all of them, it's still too early. On all of them, it's still too early. And Becton's hurt right now. But what I do need to see from Becton is that there is a work ethic there to get it, because that's what I fear a little bit right now. You know, is he busting it as hard as he needs to bust? It came in overweight, right? And those are things that concern you a little bit. So when he comes back, is he coming back the right way? And you know what, Buddha, to your point, I don't want to hear about scheme fits, okay? When it comes to wide receivers and offensive linemen, they can learn. They can be better. They can get better as players. And when you're immensely talented at that level like they are, you figure it out. You figure it out.
I agree with that. I agree with you with that. But see, that's a two-way street.
So far, they haven't.
The coaching staff has to figure out some way to get Mims on the field. That's stating the obvious.
But again, I go back to this, Buddha, to defend the coaching staff and to agree with you about what we're seeing with Douglas so far. And thanks for the call. Is for Mims, the coaches are always going to play the players they believe give them the best chance to win. So what the problem is there is it's on Mims to convince the coach that he's going to give him the best chance to win. So if that means he has to learn how to play three different positions, he has to learn how to play three different positions. That's what you do. You get better. You work at it. If it means that Becton has got to be much better in whatever this blocking scheme is, then he's got to learn to be much better in this blocking scheme. Like, it can't all be about that. I have no problem right now if you want to criticize Joe Douglas's draft class from last year. I'm not doing it yet. Yeah, Ashton Davis, I don't know where he is. But I'm not doing it yet as a whole because I still believe there are players here, and we still don't know what the deal is with Becton. I mean, we did go into this offseason feeling pretty good about the guy, did we not? He graded out pretty well last year, did he not? So I think after a game where he gets hurt in the opener, basically less than a half of football, you can't bail out just because the other guys are actually playing pretty well. Doesn't that at the same time point out that maybe he deserves some credit for getting some depth at the position with Fant and with Moses? Maybe that's true as well. 800-919-3776. That's where, if we're going to get on Douglas, it's too early. For me, middle of the year on is when you're looking at last year's draft class and you're looking at what's going on and where the team's headed, and you start to wonder or ask the questions if things are not going right. But I'm not going there yet. I think that's way, way, way too soon. Way too soon. Carlin, 800-919-3776, 10 of 9, 800-919-3776, my friends. I'm flipping back and forth between Monday Night Football and the Yankees Rangers, still 4-0 in favor of the Yankees as they play in the fourth inning, and 7-7 in the Lions-Packers game. 800-919-3776. Lots on the lines. A couple more to go. Let's load them up. Let's hit Mark in Newark next. Mark, what's up, baby?
Hey, Chris, how you doing, bro?
I'm good. You?
I'm awesome. Hey, so here's what I got. I will say to begin with, like Buddha, I'm a big men's guy. And I think that the more we holler for men's, the more they're not going to play them. So I'm just going to leave that alone. But
I don't think it's that, bro. Let's be clear, Mark. They want to win. So if they don't feel like Denzel Mims is going to give them the best chance to win over somebody else, they're not going to play him. Just to play.
Well, like I said, I'm leaving that alone because no matter what I think, they're going to do what they're going to do.
The only position where that ever gets dicey is quarterback, based on when a guy who is drafted high is ready to play.
But that's not what my main focus on. My main focus is this. I was absolutely elated by what I saw. Why? Because I expected what I saw. What I saw was the kid can make every throw. I have all confidence in the world in this kid that he can throw the ball anywhere on the field. That's not a problem. I think that, and you make this point for me a little bit. Like you said, we rushed for 150, 160 yards, something to that effect, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the LaFleur, I think, and this isn't about blame, this is about growth together. I think LaFleur, when you consider the fact that we rushed for 150-plus yards and the four picks, then that makes me think, you know, with that kind of ground attack, where, you know, why are you giving him so much on his plate? Because that 49ers offense, if you remember, it's basically a two-and-a-half read quarterback offense. He reads the X, he reads the tight end or the slot, and you check down. 1, 2, 3. Because they ran the ball most of the time, like mm-hmm. we did. I think LaFleur needs to have a, you know, grow with the rest of the team with his play calling ability, because you can't rush for 150 yards and then try to sling the ball all over the place. And the kid, he just had tunnel vision on Corey Davis. That's why. He felt the only thing I could do good is throw it to him. And you've seen how that turned out. He was
well, Mark, it is true. Mark, it is true, and thanks for the call, that you're trying to make him do too much. I do believe there is truth to that. Is he in a position yesterday where you needed to protect him a little bit more from himself? Like, when you talk about playing a boring football game, was it about the checks at the line? He's trying to make something more happen than he needs to? Or is it more about taking the air out of the football in some instances? I think it's probably a large combination of all of the above. But there are ways to make sure that it's getting across to him, hey, we can simplify this up a bit and not make you do everything here. I feel like they were relying on him to go out there and make a lot of plays to go win that game. Justice in Toms River is next on 98.7 ESPN. Hey, Justice, how you doing?
Hey, Carlin, thanks a lot for taking my call, man. It's Justin.
Justin, what's going on?
I agree with you had to say. And going back to the last point you were making, that was part of my point. You know, the way he played in the second half of that first game, I think, really got to his head, in my opinion. You know, he was very hyped up going into his first home game, and he definitely tried to do too much. And I think the Jets really set him up for failure, in my opinion. I think they put a little too much on his plate, and he was really trying to make plays to try to win the game, which I don't think was the best game plan for him going into that. I think the Jets had a lot of success on the ground, and they should have stuck with that more. But that, you know, this game is history. You know, and a lot of Jet fans, you know, I'm at work today, and they're full-blown panic. You know, realistically, he's a rookie quarterback. You have a rookie coaching staff. And these things are going to happen. Am I concerned as a Jet fan? Of course I am. You don't ever want to see a quarterback go out there and throw four picks and throw three interceptions in the first half. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think the kid has a good mindset. The way he even acted the game, He was answering the questions. I think he kind of went about it the right way. And, you know, the one another thing that concerns me, too, this organization has not developed its players, especially quarterbacks. But I do think it's a little early to put the panic button on Wilson.
Oh, I don't think this. Of course it is. Of course it is. Of course it's too early. Thanks for the call, Justin. It's way too early for that. I like the way that he handled it all. Now it's about how he handles it this week and how he handles it going out to Denver and how he's going to handle that pressure and that environment. It's a first time for everything, right? And he's going through a long list of firsts. First time he's going to play in Denver in a crazy environment and the altitude that's different. Now, he's played in that before. I believe Provo's got an altitude thing. Let's find out. Provo, Utah, altitude. I'll tell you, the internet is something. Yeah, their elevation is 4,551 feet. Okay? Denver, Colorado, elevation into Google, and that is 5,280 feet, exactly 1 mile. So it's not that far different. He's been in it before. He hasn't been in it lately. But you get the point. He's going to go through a lot of firsts this season. I'm very confident in his ability to be good. It was not my first choice, but it is certainly not my last choice. And this was coming, guys. This kind of game was coming. But what I want to know is, what else are you worried about besides this? Is there something from yesterday that really concerns you about what you saw? Because for me, there were a few things, even in a game like that, that I saw that really encouraged me, really made me feel like, this might be better than we thought after all.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.